Disclaimer: this material is provided for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute legal advice, and does not create an attorney-client relationship. Always consult a qualified attorney regarding your specific situation.
Okay, let's go ahead and unpack this. Usually when we pull a government manual for a deep dive, we pretty much know exactly what we're getting into.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We expect a really dry procedure, maybe some incredibly dense legalese, a whole alphabet soup of acronyms, and let's be honest, a cure for insomnia.
A very effective cure, usually.
Yeah. But the document we have today, this is just something else entirely. Huh. It is titled the Administrative Hearing Defense Manual, specifically the Enhanced Chapter Plan. And I have to say, calling it a manual feels like a massive understatement.
Yeah, I mean, it reads more like a cyberpunk manifesto disguised as legal advice.
Exactly.
It really does. It has this subversive edge to it that you just rarely see in technical writing. On the surface, sure, it's a guide on how to defend yourself in administrative hearings, specifically regarding land use and environmental regulations. But if you scratch that surface just a little bit, it lays out this really startling premise about how modern governance actually functions.
Hmm.
It argues that the bureaucracy isn't just a series of offices, it's a piece of software.
And that was the hook for me, because it doesn't start with zoning codes or permit applications. It starts by defining what it calls the administrative operating system, or the OS. And the claim here isn't just that the system is bureaucratic, it's that the system has been fundamentally repurposed.
Mm-hmm.
It argues that the OS isn't designed for environmental protection or public safety anymore. It claims the entire system is designed for the, and this is a quote, securitization of soil.
Securitization of soil. Yeah, that is the core concept you really have to grasp to understand this text. The manual argues that regulation has evolved into a financial instrument. And what's fascinating is how it frames this operating system as politically agnostic.
That part was wild to me.
Right. It claims it doesn't matter if the administration is Republican, Democrat, Green, Libertarian. Those are just different apps. Or, you know, skins running on top of the exact same OS.
So the underlying kernel, the securitization function that remains completely untouched, regardless of who is in the White House or the governor's mansion.
Exactly. The manual is essentially saying, don't look at the politics, look at the code.
It's a very Matrix kind of perspective. There's a line in the intro that actually stopped me cold. It says, the system doesn't use chains to bind you. It uses data.
Yeah.
It argues that when a regulator steps onto your property, they aren't there to have a conversation about your rights as a landowner. They are, quote, a human interface executing a script.
It sounds incredibly dehumanizing. But the manual argues that's exactly the point. It's trying to shift your perspective from a negotiation mindset to a data processing mindset.
So you shouldn't treat it like a chat.
If you think you're having a chat with a person, you have already lost.
Yeah.
You are in a data processing event. The regulator is there to recalibrate the boundaries of your autonomy based on a pre-written script.
Right.
Like, say, Rule 62340 in the Florida Administrative Code.
Right.
If you try to argue fairness or history while they're just processing data, you're playing a game that doesn't even exist on their server.
So let's actually dig into that data aspect, because I think that's where most people get lost. Why treat land as data? The manual moves pretty quickly from the philosophical to the financial here. It calls this the financialization of regulation.
Yes.
It uses Miami-Dade County, or MDC, and their environmental department, DERM, as the primary case study. But it strongly implies this is happening everywhere. So how does a notice of violation on, like, a muddy vacant lot translate to high finance?
Well, this is the MDC workflow that the manual describes. It's a sequence that turns dirt into dollars, but importantly, not for the landowner.
Right, definitely not for them.
It starts with a citation or a notice of violation. Once that happens, the agency asserts jurisdiction. Let's say they declare your land a protected wetland. Now, the average person thinks, okay, I can't build my barn because they want to save the frogs.
Yeah, that's the standard narrative we all hear. We assume the restriction is about the actual biology of the site.
But the manual argues that is not the end game. The end game is mitigation. When the agency restricts your land, they create a theoretical value called ecological lift. Basically, by stopping you from using the land, they claim nature is being restored or lifted. And that lift isn't just a nice concept. It is quantified into mitigation credits.
And these credits aren't just...
they aren't just gold stars on a chart, no.
Right. They are actual financial assets that can be traded.
Exactly. These credits are sold. And who buys them? It's not just other developers who need to offset their own projects. It's Wall Street hedge funds. It's institutional managers, global investors who need to back green bonds or ESG portfolios.
Environmental, social, and governance portfolios.
Exactly. They need these certified green assets to balance out their other, maybe less green, investments. So the agency essentially manufactures a financial product out of your property rights.
So if I follow the money here, my inability to build a house isn't just a sad loss for me. My loss is the actual collateral that backs a financial product being traded thousands of miles away.
Precisely. The manual creates a specific term for this, the arbitrage of autonomy.
Arbitrage of autonomy.
The agency acts as a scout for the credit markets. They identify private land. They decommission it, meaning they legally strip the owner of the autonomy to use it so its biological capacity can be collateralized.
They are arbitraging your control over the land against the value of the credits they can generate from it.
You lose the use. They gain the asset.
That is incredibly cynical, but it does explain the incentives perfectly. If the agency was just about protection, they might work with you. But if they need the asset, they need to decommission your land. Period.
There was another phrase that really stood out to me in this section, the yield on your silence.
Yeah. That's the flip side of the arbitrage. The metaphor is that every single day your land remains flagged with a violation and you do nothing about it, the regional mitigation bank gains leverage. Your loss of use is effectively a coupon payment to a bondholder somewhere.
The system needs you to be silent. It needs you to be compliant. Because your compliance backs the asset. If you fight back and win, if you prove the land isn't actually a wetland, the asset disappears. The credit just vanishes.
Which brings us to the concept of phantom protection. The manual seems to argue that the system doesn't actually care about the physical reality of the dirt at all.
Right. It protects the spreadsheet.
No.
The value is in the legal restriction, not the biological reality. If the paperwork says it's a wetland, it functions as a wetland for the financial market. Even if it's bone dry and hasn't seen a drop of water in a decade.
This is why the manual places so much emphasis on what they call the litigation circuit breaker.
Yes.
The circuit breaker. Yeah. This is the pivot point in the document. It's telling us that we cannot stop this process by appealing to sentiment or asking for mercy.
Yeah.
We have to break the machine itself.
You have to break the chain of credit creation. The manual argues that the only way to stop the financial liquidation of your property rights is to challenge the scientific methodology.
So go after the science.
Exactly. If you invalidate the data, if you prove the land isn't actually a wetland, according to their own strict scientific rules, you cut the power. No wetland, no credits, no financial asset. The machine stops because the collateral has completely evaporated.
Okay, so that is the overarching strategy. Break the data to break the financial chain. But how do you actually do that in real life? The system is huge, and most people are just regular folks. They aren't lawyers. They aren't environmental scientists. So the manual introduces this visual mega map, or the governance stack. It's supposed to help you see the battlefield, right?
It is. This is where we move from the high-level theory to actual tactics. The governance stack is designed to stop you from seeing regulation as just a random stroke of bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
You have to start seeing it as a structured architecture. You analyze it layer by layer, and layer one is authority.
The manual calls this the statute hallway. I really like that visualization. You're walking down a hallway of laws, but how do you know which door is actually real?
Well, you have to check the doors. The fundamental question you have to ask is, does the agency actually have the statutory authority for this specific action? Not just a general, vague mission statement to protect the environment.
Right. They always have that.
They do. And the manual warns that agencies often cite a general program but cannot point to the specific subsection that authorizes the specific remedy they're using against you right now. They rely entirely on you not checking the door.
And right after the statute hallway, there's the delegation door. This one feels like a minor technicality, but the manual insists it's a massive trapdoor for the agency.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Because in the U.S. and many other places, frankly, state power is often delegated down to local agencies through very specific agreements. The manual warns that local agencies often rely on assumed delegation.
They act like they have the power because they've just always done it that way.
Exactly. They coast on momentum. But the manual says, no, show me the delegation instrument.
You want the actual written contract that says they're allowed to do this.
You demand to see it. If the specific enforcing entity, the exact department standing on your lawn, isn't named in that document, or if the delegation agreement has expired, they might be acting ultra vires, which means beyond their powers.
So it doesn't even matter if you broke the rule.
Exactly. It matters that they aren't legally allowed to enforce it. It voids the action entirely.
Then we get to layer 3, which is the jurisdiction map room. Now, this seems straightforward to me. Is the land in the zone or is it not in the zone? But the manual explicitly warns about narrative geographic references. What does that actually mean?
It's a verbal sleight of hand by the regulators. An inspector might say, well, this area is part of the protected Western watershed system.
Which sounds very official.
It sounds official, and it sounds broad enough to include you. That is a narrative description. The manual says, reject the narrative entirely. Show me the map.
Show me the lines.
You have to demand parcel-specific mapping. If the alleged activity is even one single foot outside the line on the official GIS map layer, the enforcement is invalid.
It's binary. You are either in the box or you are out of the box.
It absolutely has to be. The manual stresses this point repeatedly. Jurisdiction is not a vibe. It is a line. If they don't have jurisdiction over that specific square foot of dirt, the case is dead on arrival.
To help the defender navigate all these layers in real time, because let's be honest, an administrative hearing is incredibly chaotic. The manual introduces a cognitive tool called the Memory Palace. Now, I have heard of this for, you know, memorizing decks of cards or long speeches, but using it for legal defense, that was a new one for me.
It's actually a brilliant application of the technique. Think about it. Hearings are fast. Information is flying everywhere. The agency lawyer is talking, the judge is impatient, and you are stressed out of your mind.
Yeah, your brain just goes into fight or flight.
Right. So the Memory Palace allows you to visualize the defense process as a physical space with distinct rooms. You don't have to memorize a complex legal script. You just have to walk through the rooms in your mind.
Let's walk through a few of those rooms right now. The first one they mention is the delineation lab. This is where the actual science happens, right?
Correct. The delineation lab is where you mentally check the methodology. When the agency presents their grand findings, you visualize stepping into this room. You ask, did they look at the specific plants required by law? Did they actually dig the soil sample to the required depth?
Did they follow the protocol?
Did they follow the strict testing protocol? Or did they just look at the site from the window of their air-conditioned truck and write a report? You are looking for the raw data, not their shiny conclusion.
Then there is the evidence fault. This room seems to be about what actually counts in the room.
This is a pure discipline tool. Just because a witness talks about a document or the agency lawyer waves a piece of paper around in the air doesn't mean it's actually in the record. The evidence vault forces you to pause and ask, was this actually admitted into evidence?
Oh, I see.
If it's not securely locked in the vault, it does not exist for the judge. It prevents you from wasting time arguing against ghost evidence that was never formally submitted.
And the third room is the witness gallery.
This one distinguishes between observation and interpretation. The manual is very, very strict here. A witness saying, I saw standing water on Tuesday is an observation.
Okay.
But a witness saying, the site is a degraded wetland is an interpretation. The gallery helps you mentally separate the two. So you can attack the interpretation without having to deny the basic observation.
So you can say, yes, you saw water, but that doesn't legally make it a wetland under the statute.
Exactly. You neutralize their conclusion without calling them a liar about what they saw.
The goal of this entire palace isn't just memory, is it? It's about fundamentally changing who you are in the hearing.
Right. It moves you from being a passive subject, someone who just has things happen to them, to a system-literate actor. You are debugging the state apparatus in real time. You are not flailing around. You're auditing them.
I really love that term, debugging. It implies the system is just code. And code can always have errors. Let's talk about those specific errors. The manual has a whole section on tactical defense that focuses heavily on methodology versus narrative. We touched on this in the lab, but how do agencies actually cheat the science?
Well, the source warns that agencies love to skip the methodology documentation. The raw field notes, the ugly data. And they love to jump straight to the report, which is the narrative. They tell a compelling story about your land. They say, this is a high-quality, pristine ecosystem.
But that's a story.
That's a story. Stories aren't science.
The manual gives us a deficiency checklist to fight this. What are the specific red flags we should be looking for in their paperwork?
We are looking for incomplete data sheets. Maybe they filled out the plant list because it supported their case. But they left the hydric soil section completely blank because the dirt didn't match their conclusion.
Wow. Just omitted it.
Happens all the time. We are looking for sequential gaps and, quite often, reconstructed methodology.
Reconstructed? That means they did it later.
That's when they do the paperwork back at the office. Sometimes days or weeks after the inspection is over, rather than in the field while they are looking at the dirt.
Which, scientifically speaking, is just falsification. You cannot remember the exact soil hue or the exact percentage of plant cover 3 days later sitting in an office cubicle.
It is certainly not best scientific practice, and it completely compromises the data integrity. And then there is what the manual calls evidence integration. They warn heavily about narrative synthesis.
Narrative synthesis.
That's where a report weaves a really cohesive, nice-sounding story. The site is a degraded wetland impacted by illegal fill. But when you look closely at the individual links of evidence, they don't actually support that grand conclusion.
The story is stronger than the underlying facts.
Yes. And this connects right back to the financial aspect we started with, the litigation circuit breaker.
Right, right.
If you challenge the methodology and you win, if you point out that the data sheets are empty or the soil samples weren't taken properly, you invalidate the data. If the data is invalid, the ecological lift cannot be legally quantified.
And if it can't be quantified, it cannot be securitized.
You have effectively shorted their market. You have broken the financial product by exposing the bad data inside it.
It's amazing how it all circles back to the money. But this isn't just a one-day fight in a hearing room. The manual describes the life cycle of a case. It's a timeline. And if you miss your specific moment, you are done.
This is critical for anyone dealing with this. The life cycle timeline goes observation, allegation, hearing, review. The biggest trap in this timeline is the preservation loop.
Preservation is key. Now, this sounds like standard legal jargon, but explain why it matters so much to a regular person defending their land.
Imagine watching a sports game. If the referee makes a terrible call on the field and the coach doesn't throw the challenge flag right then and there, they can't complain about it to the league office after the game is over. The score is final.
Right, you missed your window.
It is exactly the same here. If you don't object to a piece of evidence or a lack of authority during the hearing itself, in what they call the cross-exam courtroom, it effectively does not exist when you try to appeal later in the appellate corridor. You cannot bring up new complaints later on. You have to preserve the error on the record when it happens.
And that leads right to the record vault.
This is a very sobering realization for a lot of people. The administrative record is the only reality that matters. It does not matter what actually happened on your land. It doesn't matter if the inspector lied to your face in the parking lot.
It only matters what made it into the box.
The transcript.
Yeah.
The admitted exhibits. If you didn't cue your proof into the record vault, it is gone forever.
The manual also talks about how defects propagate. This is a systems theory concept, isn't it?
It is pure system dynamics. A small mistake in the initiation phase, say, a vaguely worded allegation in the very first letter that doesn't cite the correct statute, that mistake ripples forward.
It snowballs.
If you don't catch it early, it becomes a finding of fact.
Ah.
And then that finding becomes a final judgment. You have to debug the code upstream as early as possible. If you wait until the very end, the glitch is fully baked into the operating system.
As we go through all of this, it feels almost overwhelming. The system is so vast, it's so layered, it is clearly designed to be intimidating to a normal person. But the manual ends with this incredibly vivid metaphor that I think sums up the whole philosophy perfectly. It describes the system as Medusa.
Yes, Medusa. Blindfolded, sword raised, scales tilted toward securitization. It is a monster intended to completely freeze you. But the manual flips the script on the classic myth. In the old story, looking at Medusa turns you to stone.
Right. But here.
The manual says Medusa only turns you to stone if you have an unexamined reflex within. And that reflex is the fear of complexity.
That is deep. The real weapon isn't the law itself. It's your own feeling of being overwhelmed.
Exactly. The system relies on you looking at the governance stack, seeing all the terrifying complexity, and saying, this is too much, I'll just surrender and pay the fine. That surrender is what turns you to stone. It's what allows your land to become a passive data point.
So the solution isn't to look away or to hide, it's to look closer.
The manual argues that system literacy is your actual shield.
Mm.
It's about seeing that invisible architecture we've been talking about. Once you see the distinct layers, the statute, the delegation, the methodology, you realize that it's not magic.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not an unstoppable monster.
It's just code.
It's just a script written by flawed people. And scripts have bugs.
That is such an empowering way to look at bureaucracy. It strips away all the fake authority and leaves just the mechanical mechanism.
Yeah.
And mechanisms can be taken apart.
And importantly, scripts require a human interface to execute them. When you realize that the regulator standing on your property is just an interface for a larger operating system, you stop taking it personally. You stop getting angry at the person.
You stop yelling at the customer service rep.
Exactly. And you start treating the situation tactically. You stop arguing with the interface and you start debugging the OS.
So bringing this all home for our listener today, maybe you aren't fighting a wetland permit in Miami right now. Why does this manual and this highly specific way of thinking matter to you?
It matters because this operating system isn't unique to Miami. And it's not unique to environmental law. The financialization of regulation is a massive global trend.
It's everywhere.
Whether it's carbon credits, biodiversity offsets, water rights, or even urban zoning density credits. The conversion of the physical world into tradable financial data is happening all around us. It is the future of property.
So understanding how that data is created, how the sausage is actually made, is a modern survival skill.
It really is. If you own anything in the modern world, you need to understand how the system can digitize it and trade it. You need to know how to validate the data that defines your property. Otherwise, you are just a passive source of collateral for someone else's portfolio.
The manual leaves us with a final provocative question. When the regulator steps onto your land, will you be a passive subject? Or will you be the one to debug the code?
That is the ultimate choice.
Yeah.
It's all about agency. Do you own the land or does the script own you?
It is a dense document, but the implications are massive. It completely changes the way you look at a simple notice of violation in the mail. It's not just a letter anymore. It's an initiation command for a global financial transaction.
And you have the right and the tools, if you use the Memory Palace, to interrupt that transaction.
We've covered a ton of ground today. From the statute hallway to the arbitrage of autonomy. It's a lot to process, but I think the visualization tools are something everyone can take away and use.
Absolutely. Visualize the process, break it down into rooms, don't let the chaos overwhelm you, and always remember the record vault.
If it's not written down and admitted, it didn't happen. Words to live by in any legal situation. This has been a really fascinating deep dive into the Administrative Hearing Defense Manual. It certainly made me look at a simple plot of dirt and the paperwork attached to it very, very differently.
It definitely changes the landscape.
Before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. If the system is currently arbitraging our autonomy over physical land to back financial products, what other aspects of our daily autonomy are being quietly securitized in other operating systems we interact with every single day? Is your land the only thing being converted into a beta point, or are you? Thanks for listening, everyone. Keep your eyes open, watch for the invisible architecture, and don't be afraid to debug the code. Catch you on the next deep dive.